the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Lynn, I think this is number 65 as far as flagships go, right? This is 65th one. That's crazy. So 65 weeks, you and me have gotten together and hammered out these episodes. My name is Joey. Len is my co-host. As always, he's over there in the closet. Buddy, how are you? What's going on over there? Did you have a good weekend? You having a good Monday? Give me the updates.
Think about it. Everything is coming along now. The weather is starting to warm up, starting to enjoy it. Didn't get to play golf on Friday, but it's okay. I got to do some tennis related activities and getting back onto the court. So it's really fun to get back in the swing of things there and get playing more than a few times a week. So that's what I like. That's my favorite thing. Everything else is, I love playing tennis. I could do that every day, no problem. But yeah, how about over you? Everything okay over there with you, Joey?
Because, buddy, so
fun
good.
In the sun.
So good. I got a little bit of a tan. I was out Friday. What was I doing Friday night? Friday night, I went to see a house with my wife, and then we went to my in-laws for a bit, her parents, to eat a little pizza, play with the dogs. Always good to do that. And then Saturday, had a little barbecue action at her parents' place for Father's Day. And then I went to the Ticat game Saturday night with some family here from Calgary, which was dope. And yeah, it was a great game, honestly. We were up like 24-3 at halftime, and typical crazy football league finish. We lost in overtime. So there you go.
Do you not get the point, man. NHL rules?
They I think there was one rouge the entire game, pretty sure.
No.
I don't even remember.
When you go to OT, do you still get like a single point in terms of the way the NHL does it nowadays?
Do they still do that?
That's right. I guess. I haven't watched it in a long time.
And they get a point for overtime loss, I'm pretty sure, too.
Yeah. So as soon as you enter overtime, at least the way I remember it, you automatically issued 1 point, and then that's why you just, you know, you're incentivized to just go ahead and bolster the wall again. Yeah, play four forwards, go nuts, right? Who cares if you lose? You're still gonna get a point out of it. Who gives a shit? So, but I haven't followed hockey in so long, so I can't really say if it's changed. And in fact, isn't it 3-on-3 overtime now? They changed it or no?
It is in the regular season. I think it's 5-on-5 in the playoffs still.
That's the way I always remembered it. I still remember 5-on-5. And regular season, and even if you fucking lost, you lost a point.
The last playoff series I cared about was the Avalanche Florida Panthers 96 final, maybe 95 or 96 Stanley Cup final.
The Rats. Yeah, so the Florida had
yes,
the Rats.
Yes, that's right.
That was Patrick Roy's first year in the
Year Colorado was a team.
Yeah. So they traded him. That was shortly after that they won the cup in Montreal. And then, so he went over, won the cup with the Avs, and the rest is history. He solidified himself as one of the greatest goalies of all time.
Well, we may as well get on with the show. I got two sponsors plugging my ears. The first one is ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and sell, though you should never sell your Bitcoin in Canada. Len, we got a fourth promotion to talk about today. We're going to get to it. We got Shaking Sats, which everyone knows. You can buy... you can use our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, sign up, and what do you get back? You get Shaking Sats. You should wake up and shake your phone every day for a couple Satoshis. Not bad. Caps out at 1,000 a day, which is dope. Then they got the Sats back card. So you spend off your CAD balance. You get 2% back on the first 5,000, 1% after that, which is great. Another way to stack. Not too many of those faucets stacking options available for Canadians. So there's two for you there. Finally, Len, they got the Shake Paid, which I think runs until the end of this month. Maybe it'll get extended. Maybe it won't. No one knows. What that does is gives you a chance to have your entire purchase comped in Satoshis. Not bad at all. So we'd like all that stuff. And Len, they added today Shake Squads. So Carlo Campisi was going to come on the show, but he's a little under the weather. So him and I have been talking here. Maybe he's watching right now. I'm going to refer to our text messages here. A few things we're going to say here about this this program. Each squad can have up to 5 people. So you and 4 others. Every time someone on your squad makes a purchase with the card, you get 42 sats, and so does everyone else in your squad. Not bad. I don't know where they come up with that number. Doesn't much matter to me. You can't kick people out of your squad. So if you join a squad, you can't be kicked out. But by the same token, if you start a squad and someone's not pulling their weight, then you can't kick them out. They got to leave voluntarily. Something to consider. Carlo gives me some other information here that is relevant. Squad members cannot see what the other members bought, so there's no transaction visibility at all across the teams, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have spent at least one time with the card in order to join a squad. Important. So if you haven't spent yet, get on that so you can join a squad, which we're going to talk about in a bit, a CBP squad, or maybe more than one. And squad members get notified every day or so about the total they earn in Shake Squad rewards. That way you're not getting pummeled with notifications because you got one guy who's buying Slurpees every hour or whatever people are into. So there you go. And then your deposits will appear in your balance as squad rewards in your Bitcoin wallet, which is great. That's a great program, is it not? This is why we picked them as a sponsor, because they are dominating when it comes to engagement programs. I like it a lot. What are your thoughts?
I love it. And this is why I wore my ShakePay shirt for today to commemorate. And you have one on as well. So this is, there you go. See, we're in sync. Different shirts, same message. ShakePay is a great exchange to buy. And of course, never sell your Bitcoin. But moving on, Joy, we just have a second sponsor we have to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Ledin. And of course, what are you going to do with the Bitcoin that you bought from ShakePay? Why not earn some interest?
100%. You're not giving it to Celsius or any of these other shitty platforms. Hell, you're giving it to Ledin. Secure, strong, Plus 4, as they say.
Very strong. Put it on Ledin and you could earn some interest. So if you use our referral code below, put 150,000 sats on Ledin or 75 USDC and you have it for 15 calendar days and you will be rewarded with 10 USDC. If you have a large stack of Bitcoin, don't want to sell it, Ledin's there to cover you. You could then borrow against your Bitcoin, 50% loan to value. You're good to go. Fill up your car with gas, buy some groceries, whatever it is. Everything's so expensive these days, so you might have to borrow against your Bitcoin. Third, if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up and you're feeling lucky, you could use the B2X option so you could double up your Bitcoin stack. And once the price gets to a point that you're happy, you pull out like always, never leave it in, always pull out and you're good to go. And lastly, they do have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. Check their website. The Bitcoin-backed mortgages, first industry first, is not available in every jurisdiction as well. Check their website for the interest rates on the savings and the borrowing costs. So Ledin, great sponsor. We use them. And even Corey has recommended them too. As if you are going to earn some interest, and think about it. If Corey's recommending it, it's a great place to start earning interest on your Bitcoin and USDC.
It's true. If the Slim Reaper doesn't have a problem with them, then maybe you shouldn't either. I'll just also note, Len, that between Carlo and Mario, we have the two best buns in the game, right? Pretty sure?
We do.
How do we score that?
We're 2 for 2, Joey. Is there a third just floating around? We'll have to check it.
Yeah, listen, if you know of a Bitcoin company wants to pay us to do the show, they got to have at least one guy on staff with a bun, and we got to meet that guy. Okay,
that's a honest. Mandatory requirement. Just, you know, just a heads up. But a couple other things. Joey, I just want to just chop off my list here. Number one, podcasting 2.0. We'll talk about it on a weekly basis. Check it out. If you want to replace your podcast app, check out Breeze, check out Fountain. These are apps built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. And with this, you could also stream sats or send a bonus to the content creators, but you're not forced to do it. You can just simply listen to podcasts using these apps. Highly recommend it because, again, it's made by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. It's a great place to listen to your podcast. Secondly, Joey, behind me, and I'm not sure if you have it behind you as well, I have the Block Clock here. There's yours. Just want to give a shout out to HODLD, and he's the guy that was responsible for hooking us up with these wonderful pieces of technology, the Block Clock. And just got to get over here. I do have a cold card.
I got to make a video. I'm going to make a video of that. Maybe after the show or tomorrow or something, if I got time, I got to do it. That is such a slick looking piece of hardware, man. Like, fuck, is it ever nice?
Yeah. And that's it for my housekeeping items. If you have any, we could just go right to the price of Bitcoin and start ripping this guy.
Why don't we talk about the CBP options for Shake Squads?
Oh, very good. Yeah, sorry.
So let's discuss. I've had a couple of you guys reach out to me. I'm sure, Len, you've had the same. You want to be on the squad. You want to be a part of the show squad. Look, I don't use the card enough to be a valuable member of that squad. You guys, I know some of you are in like the Discord. Some of you guys are pumping. You know, I see when ShakePay does the contest, like some of you guys are pumping in entries like there's no tomorrow. You're buying stuff all day, every day, all the time. So I think it's better if we try and put you guys in touch with each other as opposed to
Did we just lose Joey?
To me and Len, you know, adding to our... No, did you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's me or if it's you. But
I don't have... I see nothing on my end. Not with my brand new router.
Yeah, there was a stutter there. So either one of us had something. Anyways.
No problem. So we got... We want to put you guys in touch with each other. So we're going to use the hashtag CBP Shake Squad. Okay? I'm going to put it in the chat. Hashtag CBP Shake Squad. And now you guys can find each other, okay? This way, we don't end up with, we don't end up with this sort of like enriching ourselves off of your purchases. You guys do so much for the show already. The last thing we want is to do that too. So help each other out. Community strong. I'm sure that you guys will find a way to make this work. It'll be awesome.
Okay, so there you go. So put that that tag in Twitter. It will help try to gather people together, and maybe you could find a willing partner. There are some people out there that reached out to me. Thank you. But I already have a small squad that I have accumulated with family and friends. And there are some heavy hitters out there that reached out to me, and I really appreciate that, because I would have made bank off you guys, or gals. And with that being said, Joey, I think we should just transition to the price of Bitcoin, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Let me pull it up. The price right now in American dollars is $20,425.
So we're above the limit, the Mendoza line, 26,615 in Canuck bucks. And actually, that's a way, way below the Mendoza line. It's a baseball term. Anyways, Joey, let's go to the A block. There's a couple of stories, very, very important stories I want to talk about. And bear with me, this is going to be a lengthy rant on my part. And I want to talk about centralized exchanges and DeFi garbage. And as everybody is aware, that we had Bitcoin take a massive step back, and we touched around $17,000 for the price of Bitcoin just yesterday. That was Sunday. And the amount of pressure on the price of Bitcoin has been nuts. And it all started back when the stock markets started taking a dive several months ago. And this negatively impacted Bitcoin. Then we had Doquan's Luna Foundation Guard selling off 80,000 BTC. Now we have Celsius teetering on collapse. And we talked a little bit about this last week, but there are some recent developments, and it's causing us to revisit the Celsius saga here. And although they deal mostly in shitcoins, it does impact the price of Bitcoin, given the fact the size of their exchange. And we mentioned last week that Celsius withdrawals, swaps and transfers were on hold. And to the best of my knowledge, this is still the case. It's now been about a week that it's been like that, maybe a little bit longer.
This is eight days.
That's incredible. And this is as their extreme market conditions, end quote. So that's the reason why they're doing this. And this has caused a number of people who have margin accounts with Celsius to be wiped out, as they can't action anything. And this is a shitty move, in my opinion, and it reeks of desperation. And it hasn't gone unnoticed by officials. In fact, in Texas, the Texas Securities Board is treating investigation into the Celsius account freeze as a priority. And the regulator is very concerned with the Celsius freeze, and this may result in significant financial consequences for customers. Looks like there's regulators that are looking at this, but it's not going to go all very well in the end, because it may just add fuel to the fire for the SEC to impose regulations and rules for protection of the consumers. Shake my head at that. But enough about Celsius. Next on the chopping blocks, we have Three Arrows Capital. And Three Arrows Capital is a hedge fund that primarily deals in the shitcoin markets. They are not a small player in this field, but they possess a terrible foundation given their exposure to shitcoins. And Three Arrows has a great deal of exposure to ETH and staked ETH. And as the staked ETH loses its peg, it creates a domino effect. Now, it's going to be a little convoluted here. I'm going to do my best to explain it, if you're going to sift through this garbage. A few months back, one of the more popular trades that were around was to borrow ETH at 2% and conduct recursive farming or do some sort of staked ETH. And because staked ETH was generating 4% of yield and the staked ETH was mostly held at a 1-to-1 ratio, it makes sense to do it. But right now, when you do it, when you put the ETH on the staked ETH chain, you can't remove it. It's stuck there until the merge, until essentially it's the ETH 2.0 takes place. I have no idea when the splurge is going to happen, but that's a topic for another time. And now that we have the staked ETH and ETH is starting to depeg, this could create a lot of problems for people that have margin calls who have borrowed the ETH of 2% and staked it on ETH platform. Could cause a cascade effect where they're going to have to start selling whatever ETH they have en masse, and it will just create more downward pressure, more people that are going to just be liquidated, and it's going to create this massive downward cycle. And Three Arrows is neck deep in this pile of shit here. And this is one of the ones that very, very large. They're one of the biggest borrowers slash clients for lenders globally. The collapse would have a monumental impact on the industry as a whole. They have borrowers from just about every single major lender out there. And this leads me to BlockFi. And BlockFi is an exchange that's popular with providing interest in yield. There was a leaked document that came out just this past week, and it shows that BlockFi lost an incredible $285 million in the past 2 years. This is during a bull market. So that's an incredible amount that they've lost in a very, very bullish time. And people are speculating that BlockFi has the potential of liquidity crisis. And this is another major player that is rumored on the brink of extinction. And just one of these collapsing, either be it Celsius, Three Aces, or BlockFi, would be incredible. But having three of them die in a very short period of time would be absolutely nuts. And there's even some talk around that FTX may have bailed out Celsius. Nothing is confirmed at this point, but it's rather interesting that this rumor is floating around. And we also have reports that Nexo has made a bid on Celsius for some of their business last week. And so there's a lot of moving parts here. And even transitioning, we could go to Coinbase. They're showing some more cracks in their foundation. They are now requiring withdrawals to go through a whitelist. And this comes with a 48-hour delay. So you will need to whitelist your wallet address, wait 48 hours, and at that point, you could consider taking out your funds. And I'm wondering, is this a way to protect consumers, or is it a way to protect Coinbase from sudden massive withdrawals? I leave it up to you to decide. And on top of this, Coinbase is also subject to a lawsuit for allegedly failing to conduct due diligence in the UST and misrepresentation of its risks. So
unreal. You just like, add that arm's length fact about Coinbase. It's not really a show unless you take down Coinbase.
Got to give them a shot to the nuts every chance I get. But lastly, now we have this gong show going on with Solana, aka Anal OS, and they're giving us a lot of comedic relief here. And there's something called Solend, and this is the largest lending market on the Solana network, and they might be ready for the liquidation to the tune of around $170 million. Again, this is more margin slash leverage plays, in my just no doubt about it. But one way they're going to be avoiding this liquidation, well, they decided to, through governance, they decided to seize one user's funding. So they've made a proposal to take over one of the user's funds and perform OTC trades as a way to avoid liquidation. So in a nutshell, they have voted to take over a whale's account with the emergency powers that they have to eliminate the chance of forced liquidation. This is incredible that they would take away somebody's investment just to avoid a collapse. This is decentralized in name only. And this is an example that proof of stake and proof of history, which Solana is also, it's a combination of the two. This shows their true colors. Once the shit hits the fan, anybody who gets fucked over, it's going to be at the expense of the people that have the most voting rights. And they have since retracted this move. I'm not sure if they're going to go ahead with taking away this one person's investment, but I'm not sure exactly what's going on. But is it because the prices are covered or they're getting a lot of flack from this? I don't know. I don't really give a fuck. I'm just reporting what I see here. And what I've come to learn from all this, Joey, is that the price of Bitcoin is indirectly, and I fucking hate to say this, it's indirectly tied to DeFi. As shitty as these DeFi products are, like fucking Luna, when that gets nuked, these things have a negative impact to Bitcoin because they start dumping Bitcoin at the market. Similarly, you have ETH. Once that gets wrecked, Bitcoin's price could also suffer as people who has exposure to ETH and also have Bitcoin, they may start selling their Bitcoin as a way to meet their margin calls and not get liquidated. But on a bigger level, you have also these large exchanges like BlockFi, Celsius, and these could go tits up. Well, it adds a lot of enormous sell pressure to Bitcoin, and it also drive the price down even further. But one thing we have to note here, something is taking place here is very historic. And what we're witnessing here in the last month and a half was nuts. But what's going to happen in the next month or so is going to be monumental. A lot of people and exchanges that are over leveraged, they're going to be fucked. plain and simple, they are fucked. The ones that, that have the ability to raise capital could potentially keep the margin call at bay. But those who are at the end of their ropes, they're done. They're just going to get left in the dust. So expect a lot more volatility in the market moving forward. And in my opinion, this is not a bad thing. This is going to shake out paper hands. It's also going to get rid of bad actors. And the ones that rely on Bitcoin's price to be high, for their very existence, if they think that Bitcoin's going to be high, they're going to be weeded out because Bitcoin, obviously, the price cannot stay high all the time. And the ones that are left standing, they're going to be stronger. They're going to consolidate users. They're going to consolidate exchanges. And what's left, there's going to be more trust within a community of the ones that are left standing. We're getting awfully close to a collapse in the shitcoin market. All we need is Bitcoin to go down another 8 to 10K. So watch out. But I will have to say this, ShakePay, I'm not blowing them right now, but I have to say that they have not gone down at all during this whole drawdown. And the same thing last year. And they've always been able to keep up, stay up, and there was never any downages. Or at least they had one maintenance period that was very, very small. They're a very good player in this whole game. I like them. I'm going to keep pumping ShakePay. They don't deal with a lot of, aside from ETH, they deal with just Bitcoin. So this is something to consider. They're going to remain strong. Everything that's left standing after all this, these are the strongest players. So keep your eyes open for this, but volatility is upon us. So be careful.
Man, great summary there. I'm not really, I'm glad you got into the stake death thing because I have no desire to go into the weeds on that. There's so many moving parts. It's like a Ponzi shell game. You and me talk about it all the time. So whatever. I mean, it is what it is. People are still playing these games. Let's talk a bit about this sort of company that's in everyone's view now, BlockFi. Pretty important if BlockFi, you know, can't meet their loans, right? Can't meet their deposits, can't meet all that stuff. That's pretty big service. It's, I think, on the front of sort of the front end of the regulatory sphere. Doing some of these loans. We've talked about how they were under attack from the state of New Jersey, I think, or state of New York, I should say, right? That was last year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. This is ringing a bell. I think you're right.
Yeah. So they've kind of been in the crosshairs already. You know for sure that regulators, like that meme of the guy behind the tree, like rubbing his hands, they're waiting for those guys to go belly up or to have some kind of problem. Zach Prince, who's their founder, I think a co-founder actually, He seems to refuse to discuss whether or not BlockFi uses some of the services that have gone belly up, specifically like these kind of risky loan practices, where they have exposure to Three Arrows, stuff like that. The BlockFi people will say that no news is good news. I would say that if he's not willing to tell you they don't, then probably they do. He leans on stuff like, you know, it's not our policy to discuss specific risk or specific risk exposure. You know, that policy is written in-house, right, by some legal team. If you really want to protect the service and clear your name, especially in a time like this, you can do it. It's really not that hard. You can just amend that policy. I'm sure it wouldn't be that big a deal. It's noteworthy, I think, as well, that the same people who had on Packy McCormick a bunch also had on Zach Prince a bunch. Different podcasts, but the same network, The Compound. So Compound and Friends had McCormick on a bunch, and Animal Spirits had Zach Prince on a bunch to take basically mailbag questions from their listeners. And Zach Prince, as far as I can tell, Len, podcast or YouTube hasn't had a public appearance, like a long form or even an interview public appearance in 7 months.
Been in hiding.
Make of that what you will, right? For a guy who was doing a lot of public work, he's not really doing anything now. Also noteworthy here, BlockFi, I think, laid off 20%. Was it 18% or 20%?
You're correct. It's one of the two, but you're right. It was a decent number.
So man, like that to me, a great way to start saving cash is to cut heads, and you only really cut heads when every dollar matters, and every dollar matters in something like a margin call. So like you really need to have that stuff sealed up, right? All your I's dotted and your T's crossed. Also, Len, you know, we talk all the time about how it's important that crypto exchanges, not just Bitcoin exchanges, but any exchange that deals in Bitcoin or any of these things. If you're going to claim to be, you know, apart from banks in a positive way, right? The money's always available. It's transferable for cheap. There's higher interest rates, things of that nature. Certainly, one of the ways that you would start to cast doubt over your operation and even potentially the liquidity of your operation would be to close crypto withdrawals for 4 days on a long weekend. So BlockFi announced on June 15th that everything will be closed Monday, June 20th, in observance of the U.S. holiday, Juneteenth. So to get a withdrawal over the weekend, you had to submit it by June 16th at 8 p.m. Now, I don't know about you, Len, but I'm pretty sure that you don't need anyone to press a button to allow for a crypto withdrawal from a wallet. Do you agree with that? Am I missing something there? I don't want to speak out of turn, but it seems to me like that's kind of unreasonable.
Who knows? There could be somebody physically there moving something from one desk to another. So I, you know, it's a piece of garbage when you're getting these type of excuses. That's what it is. It's a fucking excuse.
So isn't the question, why are they pausing withdrawals? Do these guys are so, they're so entrenched. I honestly can't even say this with a straight face because it just knocks my socks off. After all the shit that's gone down in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, this is the time you chose to tell people they can't take their money out for some arbitrary reason. This is the time that you've chosen to do this. That is beyond me. That is poor management at best. Could be something a lot worse in the worst case scenario. There's a great Twitter account, Otter Roo, with four O's at the end, which I just discovered yesterday or Saturday, I guess, on this BlockFi thing. And man, does he ever have some good stats, he or she or they or them. I don't know who it is, but really, really good stuff. This account pointed out that the terms of service, though they're still dated March of last year or March of this year, they were actually edited last on June 15th. So what's that, 5 days ago? Again, make of that what you will, but I doubt very much that these loan companies, if they could at all avoid this and stay out of the public eye and stay out of the crosshairs, this is not something you should be doing, in my opinion. So during 2020-2021 fiscal year, which, Len, as you know, saw Bitcoin at not one, but two all-time highs, two all-time high bull runs, one to about 60,000, one to about 70 US. BlockFi, do you know how much money they lost in that fiscal year?
So if I'm going to, I'll say around 140 million.
290 million.
No, that was for 2 years or something. I was quoting that earlier.
During 2021. I think that's one fiscal year.
$285 million in the past 2 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Over two.
So years. I'm just God, basically Len, cutting
thank,
in half.
Thank God. Okay. So 140. Okay. So
yeah, just, see, it's so much better, now. Right? Like I'm so bullish in them.
We're being psychological.
Don't bury them. Here. Like it's
fine. So BlockFi forecasts that from the year 2022 to 2023, by the way, what are we in right now? 70% drawdown, something like that. Retail trading will improve by 400% and institutional revenues will increase by 300%. Somehow I fucking doubt it, Zach. I don't know when those projections were made, but obviously like now it's almost impossible to do this because on like a dollar basis, if you're taking a percentage of each trade, the dollar values are too low now. A $20,000 Bitcoin, 1% isn't going to get you a 400% growth from the last time you projected these numbers on the retail side. Institutions are not even thinking about this anymore, I don't think, generally speaking. So now this is really the best part. BlockFi continues, Len, okay? Even though they're not handing out insane interest on their Bitcoin, they are handing out insane interest on some of these alts. Let me hit you with a few numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. On something called HBAR, which I've never heard of, okay? You can deposit HBAR. There's no limit, no tiers, 12% interest. Wow. Guaranteed, okay? OMG, which I think is Omise Go, right?
Not Oh My God.
Maybe somewhere, but I think it's Omise Go, the token name. That's no limit as well, 10%. ADA, right? Everyone's favorite, Cardano, 10%, no limit, no tiers there either. Here's one that's going to knock your socks off. Dot, Polkadot, no limit on the deposit, so no tiers. Guess what the interest rate is?
9%?
15. So these guys are telling you that these Ponzi tokens with no fixed supply, no decentralization, governance boards that will freeze your tokens if they think there's going to be a liquidation event, that they're going to offer you 15% of these things. It's a disaster. And there's more insanity. I'm going to post the link in the YouTube chat here. Have a look for yourself at some of these things. This is going to blow you away. I'll just note here that you and me have talked about this before. I said this to a friend of mine. I think that I heard this somewhere, but it wouldn't surprise me if the words were different. Len, if you put your tokens in a yield product and the yield is too good to be true and you don't understand where the yield is coming from, do you know what the next thing you should think is?
This is a scam. And then you run far, far away from it.
You are the yield, Len. You are the yield. Okay. Interesting other thing here from Otter Roo that I pulled a screenshot of. assuming that every BlockFi user has the same amount of money deposited, which is a weird assumption, but it's kind of a good metric to see like the distribution of funds and the availability of the money if it were to be withdrawn at the same time. If every person had the same amount of money deposited, Len, and there was 1,000 users, okay? Do you know how many users could get their funds out immediately according to this guy's calculations?
Half.
34. So talk about under-collateralized. This is it, man. And I'll just note that, like, much the same way that Terra and Doquan probably worked with the VCs and supporters that he had from venture capital, I can almost guarantee these guys are doing the same thing. They're paying out the guys who helped get them there, and they're paying out their owners, paying out their sort of dinner buddies. Retail's never going to win in these arrangements. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, to your point, you know, I don't want to get a scrape, you know, a burn on my knees here for lead in, but if you look at the lead in breakdown of depositor and creditor priority, you're a lot higher on the list with them than you would be in these other platforms. And they're proud of that, among other things that they should be proud of. So we're proud to have them as a sponsor for that reason, among others. Coinbase starting to do this as well. So you mentioned this in your description, so I won't go too deep here, but you know, this like 48-hour whitelist thing, are you kidding me, man? Like, are we serious about this? Coinbase is another one where if they go belly up, that's like the destruction in Bitcoin and crypto will be enormous. It'll be tantamount to nuclear warfare, man. We can't have that happen. Although I think probably it's on the books for at least a few other exchanges, if not them as well. It's, you know, it's important to be able to know where your funds are if they're on an exchange. So you can track hot wallets, for example. Ledin has proof of reserves, but on an exchange, okay. And like, I'll say this, even though ShakePay is a sponsor, it doesn't matter who your funds are with. It doesn't matter how safe they are. They are always, always, always going to be safer with you. That's the thing to take away from all this, that there's never zero risk leaving your stuff anywhere. And that's just the fact of the matter. So let's move on here to our friends at Solana. This is crazy. So you mentioned the liquidation event that was kind of coming down the pipeline here from this whale. Do you know how many? Well, you had the number. It was 187 million, I think, dollars, right?
170.
170 million worth of dollars in Sol End or Sol Lending tokens or Sol tokens, whatever the story is. Do you know how many governance tokens were needed to basically nerf that intention to sell?
I wouldn't even have a clue.
Only 100 million, so about half. Do you know how many of those 100 million were owned by the same person?
All
it was 107 million. It was 107 million total votes, I think, to stop the transaction.
It's centralized, so that I would imagine most of them were owned by
about 100 million. One person owned about 100 million of them. So the guy who stands to lose the most money in real terms, he says, "I can't. We're not going through with this, right?" And he's probably getting pressure from VCs, of course. There's been some great Twitter spaces the last like hour or so before we hopped on here. We were both in one. It was pretty jokes.
No, I know. I can't go in.
Oh, you weren't in it. You weren't in it. No. Oh, Gandalf, me, Brandon, yeah, and Wayfaring were in there too. I think
I muted one of the guys that were hosting it, so I can't see it and I can't go into it. But I'm never going.
Good. Nope. I like it. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Also, that vote, Len, was held in about 6 hours from start to finish on a Sunday afternoon. So I mean, centralized. Yeah, I think that's an understatement. I have some other stuff here about like just the fiasco. It's insane, man. It's insane. And I think I also read that potentially that vote was actually clawed back by some other mechanism on the network. Did you mention that? Did you hear about that?
Yeah. So initially that vote that took place, it was done very, very fast. And it looks like they have taken a step back and they're not going to go through with it. And they're going to use they're going to proceed with some other plan. But I suspect it's because the price of Solana has gone up and the chances of getting liquidated is now much, much further reduced. So they don't have to do anything really at this particular moment. And that's my guess. I could be wrong.
I'll close with this since I don't want to go too deep. And you said you got some important stories in the B block that we want to maybe spend some time on. You're right when you say that this is going to have downward pressure on the Bitcoin price. All this stuff has downward pressure on the Bitcoin price. The Bitcoin price is so closely interwoven with these scam Ponzi platforms for reasons that are beyond my control and beyond your control. But I'll just say that when you're buying Bitcoin at these depressed prices, you really got to think about the difference between price and value. Price is what you pay for something, and value is what you get. And I think right now, you know, NFA, of course, but I really feel good about the value I'm getting on these buys.
Yeah, agreed, because you're longing this shit, and you know that this thing is going to be going up way, way more than what you're buying it at right now. But let's move on, Joey. There's another topic I want to talk about is the U.S. economy. We talk about this on a weekly basis, but here we go again. And we're getting more and more data from the United States that their economy is not the pillar of strength that it once was. And we can start off with the producer price index, the PPI. And wholesale prices are up from April to May 0.8%. And now year over year, we're standing at 10.8%. It's a pretty high year over year number. Historic high is 11.5%. We hit that back in March. So we're still very, very close to that all-time high. And energy is the primary reason for the high numbers. And things probably won't be getting any better in that regards, because the demand for gas is going to be increasing, and as we are in the summer months, and refineries are really not willing to increase their output due to an uncertain future. There is right now a systemic shift to have electrification of vehicles. So refineries may not be willing to invest to increase their output, since the demand for gas will be taking a downturn as internal combustion engine cars will be less in demand moving forward. This is due to politics for pushing EVs to be produced and sold. And expect inflation to run red hot for some time. But dealing with the high gas prices, we have something that the government might be doing, and they're tackling this themselves. A Biden official was mentioning that they're looking at the option to issue rebate cards for gas as a way to deal with higher prices at the pumps. Very interesting way of doing it. And not to be outdone, the Fed is doing something to stop runaway inflation, and they have increased interest rates by 75 basis points just last week. And now if you look at the G7, all the banks, all the central banks, the United States surprisingly has the highest posted rate for their interest rates. They are sitting at 1.75%. And in case you're wondering, Canada is number two at 1.5%. But let's keep going on with these stats, Joey. In January 2021, so around a year and a half ago, the 30-year mortgage rate was 2.65%. And the average new home price in the U.S. was $401,000. Today, the 30-year mortgage is 5.78, so it's more than double. And the average new home price is $570,000. If you're assuming a 20% down payment, that is a 106% increase in the monthly payment.
No one's even got it. It's a fucking disaster.
It is disgusting. This is only in a year and a half. They've increased the mortgage payments by 106%. That's nuts. It's a house of cards, right? Just to come on down. But let's go into some more interesting statistics. The U.S. retail sales, they have slowed down in May by 0.3%. This is after April posted a gain of 0.7%. And the 0.3% reduction, this is a miss by the dart-throwing economist. And they had their dartboards predicting a 0.1% gain for the month of May. So instead of being at a gain, we're at a loss, not looking good. And as borrowing got more expenses due to the increase in interest rates, it's noted that car sales have dropped off. Fuel prices, of course, have increased. And people's spending habits is now being noticed as starting to change. And with the borrowing costs even higher, people are going to even further change their spending habits, given that the interest rates just changed last week. And even some more interesting stats, and I'm going to give kudos to BTC Gandalf for this one. In the U.S., the government spending equates to roughly $3 out of every $10 of the goods and services produced in the United States per year. And 41% of that spending is the U.S. government, such as selling their treasuries. They're essentially funding the whole economy there. And that's more evidence that the U.S. government is propping up their economy. And all the numbers that they're presenting to us with the GDP and all that garbage, it's a falsehood. And it's because it's being manipulated by injection of money into the economy. And if the Fed, this is very scary, if the Fed ever decides to repair their money printer, and it takes some time to put it offline for a few days or maybe a few weeks, the economy is going to suffer hard. And even more stats, Joey. The S&P was down 10 of the last 11 weeks. The last time this happened, 1971. And from the Bank of America, quote, at one point this past week, more than 90% of the stocks in the S&P 500 declined that day. This is the fifth time in the past 7 days. Since 1928, there's been exactly zero precedences. This is the most overwhelming display of selling in history, end quote. From the Bank of America. Let's keep piling on this bullshit, Joey. We have U.S. jobless claims. They came in at $229,000. This is much higher than expected. 217,000 was the expected number, but 229 was what we got. And this is the highest figure we got since mid-January. And at that time, that was when Omicron waves was going at its full force, and a lot of people were staying home. What's happening now? I do not know. And there's really no other way to spin this. The economy is running on fumes. We have confirmation of a recession is just coming in the next few weeks. Inflation is up. PPI is running high. Interest rates are rising. Wages are stagnant. And we hear talks from the Fed about doing QT. And all this, Joey, what's the biggest news story today? I took a look at USA Today. The biggest news story, Buffett's Dairy Queen loses lawsuit over Blizzard name. They're talking about Warren Buffett and
who'd they lose to? Like Blizzard Activision?
I have Diablo? No fucking clue.
Diablo 4 putting a claim on the ice cream?
No, it's not Activision, but it's somebody else. But apparently they lost the claim for the Blizzard name. But nonetheless, it's basically what I'm looking at this. Everything's on fire. We're focused on something else. It's smoke and mirrors. It's bread and circuses. Bitcoiners know what's up. The people listening to our show know what's up. This is why I fucking Bitcoin. It's a fucking disaster out there. It's fucking bad.
I got tons of receipts here, buddy. This is really something. So let's, should I do the notes screen share here? Maybe
go nuts.
Let's do it. Fuck it. Why not? Some more behind the scenes looks here at preparation for the show. So I think you can you see that? Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So here's my notes for the show. So look, let's talk about this Fed Now thing. Can I make this bigger? Is it right here? Can I make this bigger? Maybe.
I think you have to hold control and like scroll up.
I'm going to, that only works on Windows. I think I'm going to share this. Yeah. I'm going to share this with you guys. This is like the most dishonest, disingenuous. And like, these guys are the king of disingenuous, but this is like ridiculous to me. So we talked about this last week. Remember this, Fed Now projection. So this is where we were last week. We just finished this retail trade import prices. And the projection dropped from 0.7 to zero. Now here, the next day, they had the housing starts for the quarter, okay? They didn't change the forecast. Do you know what the housing starts were for the quarter that they reported?
No.
Let me tell you. They reported the worst housing starts in 13 months, okay? And of course, Len, that just means that everything has to stay at zero. They just cannot predict contraction. They refuse to do it. They're never going to do it. Okay. So that's one thing. Then we start talking about some of these other stats, and man, my man, Jeff Gundlach, who will never come on the show. He literally follows zero people on Twitter and talks about the Buffalo Bills and investing. That's the dream. That is the absolute dream. He released his quarterly Fed Day slide deck, which he always has a clever title for and a little story at the front. So this one's called It's Not Unusual, and it's got a picture of Tom Jones, and he gives you a little background on the Tom Jones song, It's Not Unusual. Outstanding. Highly recommend that presentation if you haven't watched already. I pulled some slides. I'm going to talk about them now and give you some other data to go with it that we kind of pulled from the Bitcoin world as well. So the Fed is raising rates to try and curb the inflation. We know this, right? Inflation's out of control. Everyone knows it's out of control. Boomer in the chat talks about PPI. I love PPI as a stat. Boomer, I got something even better for you today that you're going to love, my brother. Okay. Believe me on this. You're going to love these numbers. The effects of rate hikes, Len, the problem with these things is that they're a lagging indicator and a lagging action. So the rate hike that they did Wednesday, right? There's no way they know what the effect of that rate hike was in 4 weeks when they have another FOMC, right? We agree on that?
Correct. It's all reactionary.
Safe to say. They're always going to be reactionary, or they're careening down a road and they just keep hitting the guardrail on either side, basically, is how these guys steer the economy, right? With Louis Braille behind the wheel. So they're raising 75 again. This is not a good way to set policy, all right? The Fed funds rate, though, Len, is still deeply negative. The Fed funds rate, like the real rate, is is the Fed funds rate minus the CPI. It's still negative 7.4%. They're so far away from neutral, the actual term neutral, not this technical bullshit they come up with all the time. The neutral interest rate that everyone says is, you know, neither stimulative nor contractionary for the economy that Powell always talks about. By the way, at last month's FOMC, did you hear him talk about where the neutral rate was? He's like, there is no real number. It's like more of an idea. Like, it's astrology, man. It's astrology. So anyways, story for another time. Let's talk about the U.S. personal consumption of goods and services numbers, courtesy of our friend Jeff Gundlach over at Double Line. U.S. import and export price inflation are at 11.9% for import and 17.9% for export. There's no hedonic adjustments there. That's just the price of the stuff, man, okay? So if you average that out, what do you get? You get about 14%. The inflation rate on the stuff that we produce or they produce and the stuff they export is up 14%. So this CPI thing is ridiculous. It's obviously not true. And this is the number you need to prove that, right? Our favorite health stat, consumer credit spiraling way out of control. It was a 10 handle in mid-21. You know what it is now, Len?
No.
31%. It's so high. 300% higher, okay? Pre-pandemic monthly payment for a new mortgage was about 1,000. Now it's about 1,700. We say this all the time. You're always going to put a roof over your head before you do anything else. And if that roof costs you more and more and more, you can't buy McDonald's. It doesn't matter what they call the Dairy Queen ice cream. You ain't getting one. You ain't getting Blizzard. One. You're staying home. You're staying home. Another great stat from Double Line. 30% of monthly income is now going toward mortgages in the States. You know when the last time it was that high, Len?
71?
Never. Not even before the GFC.
Oh, so we're making history right now.
So we got that. As home prices go up, rent is going to go up too, because as more people are forced out of the housing market, they're forced into the renter's market. And so even owner's equivalent rent pretty soon is going to be a difficult shell game to play with, because it's going to be reflected in these extra renters pushing up prices. This is going to happen everywhere, man. Okay. And that's going to cause upward pressure on CPI. This is really not that hard to figure out. Okay. The more that we allow this to continue, the worse it's going to get. There is no question about it. And I didn't put this in my notes here, but did you see what the German PPI number was today?
I saw the chart. It looked like a Weimar Republic 2.0. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it looked really bad.
It's like 33% or something like that. It's so high.
It's just the sharp incline for the past little while. It's disgusting.
Damn, man. Damn. And like, I just think, dude, you know, and that this is, and like we said last week, I feel like we say this all the time, but you cannot stress this enough. You're getting to the point now where you're going to have mortgages renewing at more than 50% of the total outstanding mortgages by the end of this year. It's the third year of COVID, third year where the rates will be significantly higher than they were 2 years ago when you got your mortgage. As more people come into that scenario, that situation, discretionary among even the high middle class earners is going to take a hit. It's just going to happen. It's just the way things go. And, you know, commodity prices are high, so builders don't want to build for houses that people can't afford. And the flywheel spins, man. It's not that hard to figure out. And if you want to see how nervous Jerome Powell is, go back and look at the Fed speech and see if you can see the guy. He's shaking, Len. He's literally shaking at the podium with the paper. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's not a strong public speaker. Maybe he gets a little nervous. I'm not sure. But I do know that if I was in charge of the modern economy for the globe, I would do my damnedest to make sure that I wasn't shaking with the pages up there. But looking at these numbers, you know, I can't really blame them. So let's see what happens. I can't wait to do next month's PPI, CPI update. Should be good. When's Canada come? Canada's comes out next week, right?
I suppose so. I'll be perfectly honest. I am not looking forward to seeing any of these numbers, because it's solidifying the fact that this thing is on its last legs. And it's a sad thing to see go, because it's going to be some real difficult times ahead, regardless of whatever decisions are made. It's just
let me hit you with one more here. Another chart that I'd like to share with our faithful viewers and listeners here. As far as the disgusting shell game, which you and me love to talk about, on the CPI print, they have, like we talked about, homeowners equivalent rent. So they use something called shelter. It's called shelter in the CPI. Our friends at Double Line, again, Gundlach, man, I cannot recommend these enough. You can go to the Double Line YouTube page. It'll have all these slide decks. They're about an hour long. They're dense, so you got to pay attention. And also it has his Fed Day MSNBC interviews or CNBC interviews, which are so good. They're about half an hour long, and he pulls no punches. He hates the Federal Reserve, Len. He hates the Federal Reserve with a passion. He thinks they're incompetent and that the Fed funds rate just follows a two-year treasury. And that's all those guys do is just do something the two-year treasury does, except on a lag and with more fanfare. Let me just get this.
They don't have any long-term vision. That's at least the
perception. No, I know. I know they don't. So I know they don't. It's a total joke.
Too bad.
So this is good. CPI uses this blue line here. Okay. 7.4%. CoreLogic home price index on the S&P, 40% compared to the 7% they're using in CPI for shelter. You're like, this is juvenile level data manipulation. You know, like, this is really incredible stuff. And people are going to start, you know, like you said, like I said, like the chat saying, it's hard to hide this stuff for too much longer. And so we'll talk a bit later about the what's the guy's name? Bullard from the Federal Reserve talking today about where he thinks the Federal Reserve is and where he thinks the economy is. But this is like, it's dangerous, man. Never been a more dangerous time to be an investor, someone shopping for a home, someone living check to check, all these things. It's very, very, very tumultuous times out there.
They're planning these things out with Etch-a-Sketches. I'm pretty positive that's how they're doing it. It's just a fucking disaster. Anyways, that's it for the A block. Let's transition to the rest of the news. And you know what? Since you were talking about mortgages, I'll talk about Canadian mortgages right off the bat. The Canadian mortgage debt right now is approaching $2 trillion in total, which is an extremely high number. And again, that's take this into consideration that Canada's revenue as a whole annually is $400 billion through taxation. And
can I hit you with a question? Because sure. I'd be curious if you have the history on that number. Is $2 trillion 50%, 25%? What is it? What was it in 2019?
Sorry, I don't have any previous, but I'm just trying to put in perspective here what it is, because like the total amount of revenue Canada, the federal government brings in is only 400, and I say only, still a lot of money here. It's $400 billion annually. If the total debt for mortgages is $2 trillion, it's vastly exceeding it. It's 5X, right? And it's, in my opinion, it's kind of like a ticking time bomb, especially when you're considering with higher rates and a stumbling economy. You're probably going to have a lot more foreclosures coming up. And who's the one that's going to be holding the bag at the end? It's most likely going to be the taxpayers. So just put things in perspective. $2 trillion of mortgages floating around. Only we collect $400 billion annually. Like, that's a big disparity. I'm not going to say that all $2 trillion is going to go tits up, but even if it's a small percentage, it means that a lot of Canada's revenue is going to be diverted strictly to that to make that work. And it's a sad reality. You know, interest rates going up, people are not going to be working as much because the economy is not doing as strong. We're in for some really rough times ahead. So just be careful and plan accordingly.
Make sure you get a little Bitcoin. Rod in the chat asked a great question. How much of that is secured by CMHC?
Again, I don't know. That's a great question. Probably even if it's not, even if it's...
Well, you said earlier though, Len, like that number for 20% is getting so high now. The stress test, I think, is more difficult now than it was 5 years ago, right? Like, wouldn't it make sense if it was a high number?
Maybe. That's even if it's not, even if it's strictly just on the backs of the chartered banks or other mortgage lenders. What's going to happen if they go tits up? They're going to be billed out by the taxpayers as well. So ultimately, it doesn't matter who's holding it. If it's CMHC or one of the chartered banks, we are going to hold it in the end. This is our bag to hold, and it's not looking good. We saw what happened in 2008 in the States. Yeah. Same thing that happened here. But
yeah, Bitcoin, all caps, points out too that we're in Canada, we're about 50%. I think the last I saw Bitcoin was 47% variable rate mortgages here. So I don't know. I mean, the discount is still significant enough that I'm happy I'm on a variable rate. But if they hike another, you know, 2 points, then I'm basically losing that discount, right? So, all that to say that the waves are starting to pick up a little bit, Len. We're going to see who's got shorts on for sure.
It really depends when you locked in. I mean, if you had to have a crystal ball to figure it out, because I know that they were offering 5 years fixed at below 2% at one point. So that was very, very competitive. But again, who would have known what's going to happen? So you need to have the crystal ball to figure out when is the best time to lock in, but a different topic for a different time. Let's talk about in Canada is joining another one of the other countries out in the world, but we're trying to fight inflation by spending and trying to, so basically we're spending money to try to deal with the inflation. And $8.9 billion in measures have been undertaken to tackle affordability issues. And I talked about how much Canada brings in as a total for all its taxation and user fees, $400 billion. Well, we're putting aside $8.9 billion. So you can give an idea of like how much that represents. So what are these measures going to include? Well, it's going to boost the Canada workers benefit by $1.7 billion this year. Individual workers can now receive up to $1,395 a year in benefits, while families can qualify for up to $2,403. And these amounts would be boosted by $1,200 for individuals and $2,400 by families. That's for an estimated 3 million Canadians out there that will receive the support. OAS, that's old age security, is going to be going up by 10%. And that's for people that are over the age of 75 and older, starting from July of this year. And that's another 3 million seniors that are going to be getting this added payment. And there's going to be a one-time housing affordability payment for low-income earners of $500, essentially for people that are renting. They're going to be given a $500 check to deal with this rising cost. They're going to be reducing childcare by an average of 50% by year's end and bringing it to an average of $10 a day by 2025-26. They're going to provide free dental coverage to Canadians that are earning less than $90,000 a year. And this is first starting with children under the age of 12 in 2022. And at $90,000 a year figure, I believe that applies to households, not specific individuals. I need further clarification, but I believe that's $90,000 per household. And they're going to be increasing the index for inflation, including the OAS, GIS, and Canada Pension Plan. So right now, they're going to be increasing the amount that is going to be indexed to inflation. So yeah, there's a lot of money that's going to be floating around. It's going to be helping people that need it. But fighting inflation with spending more money is, it's good temporarily. In the long run, it might lead to even more inflation. So yeah, I leave it up to you, Joey. What do you say about this?
Gong show, total failure. And also on top of that, let me go one step further. CPI as a metric, as a statistic used by, you know, the bodies in question, is nothing but a tool to keep pensions and retirements solvent. It serves no other function, honestly, in a modern economy. No one believes these numbers. But if you start telling pension funds that the inflation rate is 15% or whatever Gundlach says it was in the States, they can't keep up. The stock market can't keep up. They try and find other vehicles to go on the risk curve and they blow up. And so you have to have some kind of number that looks manageable. Even if though they are using that 7% number, show me a pension fund that's going up 7%. Show me a pension fund that's talking about 7% increases where the fixed income is indexed to CPI. The Ontario Teachers Union is not doing, they're not doing that. The unions aren't doing that.
They have staked ETH. They're getting 7%.
Oh, they're using STETH. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's good. So when that thing splurges all over their retirement, let me know how it goes. It'll probably be sticky, is my guess. That's what the STD stands for.
What a joke that whole thing is.
Yeah, really, all right. Can we at least start saying this out loud? CPI, say it with me, okay? CPI is a tool to keep pensions solvent. That's what it is. It is nothing else at this point because no one with a brain believes any of these numbers.
I believe in them. It's all true.
Oh, fuck. Here we go. Yeah.
Okay. So moving on, the BC Public Inquiry they've completed a study. There's a conclusion that the Canada Federal Anti-Money Laundering resources are unreliable. And this is shocking news to me because I thought that only Bitcoin was the source of all money laundering. And so they've decided that, no, it's also in traditional finance that is taking place. And this is from something called the Cullen Commission. You can check it out, cullencommission.ca. And it's a commission of inquiry into money laundering in British Columbia. I know it's in BC, but still, we could take this more on a grander scale. And the commission warns that over the past two decades, the federal government has enacted increasingly complex legislation aimed at addressing money laundering activity. However, serious questions have been raised about the effectiveness of that regime in relation to money laundering in the province of British Columbia. So specifically, according to this commission, FinTrack received 31 million reports in 2019-2020. That's a lot of reports for money laundering.
And during that period, only, remember, 31 million were reported. Only 2,057 were reported to law enforcement. And of that, just 355 to
law enforcement.
It's a very, very low number here. I will have to say, on a personal level, housing is the best spot, and I don't know this from personal experience, but this is from what I understand. Housing is the best place to do money laundering. And I'll explain why. You buy a house and you could do any upgrade you want to it with cash. And how you got that cash, you could have got it through drugs or through whatever means necessary. Now that house is worth more. You sell it, goes on the market, and the money is washed clean. Rinse and repeat to the next house and the next house. You could do this indefinitely and just keep upgrading the home with dirty money and it gets washed clean. The housing industry is full of dirty money. Mark my words, it's full of dirty money. And here's an example that we're talking about Canada's federal anti-money laundering resources. It's toothless. All these reports, and it only results in a couple of thousand that were referred to law enforcement. That's pathetic. Bitcoin is money laundering? Hell no. It's the traditional finance.
Those numbers you gave there for the number of reports, number of law enforcement follow-ups, and the number of, was it RCMP follow-ups after that?
It was, let me just pull her up. It was 2,057 were referred to law enforcement and just 355 to the BC law enforcement.
That sounds like the Tinder swipe pipeline. Like you swiped right on 31 million people. you chatted with 2,000 of them and only 300 of them gave you their phone number. Something like that.
It's a numbers game.
That's a breakdown, right? For the modern day Tinder night. So anyway, all that to say, man, like Len, this is like what people say about the TSA in the States, right? Like the amount of resources that go into taking your shoes off, putting you through the X-ray machine, looking at your phone, swiping your bag, all this stuff. Like, you don't catch anyone. No one gets caught. All you need is the metal detector. You don't need all this other dog and pony show stuff. And to me, like Len, you said it there. If you want to see where the money laundering is, like the BC real estate market's a great place to start, you know? Like, really not that difficult, is it? Like,
let's not just focus on the BC real estate.
You're talking about BC.
But I'm just saying this could apply to any real estate market. That's the easiest way. You know, to wash money and just come up clean, just fucking upgrade your house.
I am dumbfounded by these stories.
Anyways, FTX, is that the one that Bankman-Fried is the one that's
SBF? Yeah.
Yeah. So the Zoomer perm? Is that the name that?
I think he's just going bald and he's got like a bad comb forward because that ain't the Zoomer perm.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay. Anyways, he's got enough money. He could fix that. FTX. They are planning to acquire Bitvo, and that's a Canadian exchange. And this is a way to expand their services in Canada. Really interesting stuff. Remember, we had WonderFi recently purchase Bitbuy and Coinberry as well. So there seems to be some consolidation happening in Canada. And like I mentioned before in the earlier, the first segment of our show, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be teetering on collapse. And some of it is going to be just gobbled up by other organizations. And here is one, I'm not saying that Bitvo is prime for collapse, but it's just, there are a lot of players in this field in Canada, and you're probably going to have some consolidation. So FTX purchasing Bitvo, good for FTX. I'm not sure how big of a clientele that Bitvo has, but they'll absorb it. They'll do whatever they can. And hopefully that whatever services they offer to us, it's pretty good. But FTX, they sponsor umpires. What else can we say about them? They sponsor also arenas, right?
I think they own the Miami Heat arena now, don't they?
They own the arena itself or just the name?
Oh, the naming rights, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, good for them.
I think. Bear markets are for consolidation, right? The same way that all your shit tokens in the, you know, bottom 9,999, you know, anything basically outside the top five, you're almost guaranteed to see turnover, rollover from this bear market to the next bull market. Same thing's going to happen for a lot of exchanges. They're going to get bought, consolidated, and that's what you expect. That happens in the stock market too, in TradFi, because the valuations get so low during these bear market periods that, you know, boards get bored, honestly, and probably also want to protect some of their investment. And so this is what they vote for. So let's see. There'll be more. There'll be lots more to come if this sustains, right?
Mm-hmm. I want to now talk about a story, and I want to give kudos to Ethan Liu for providing this information. He tweeted this one out. It was a family court case, and this was in Ontario, and it was involving the division of assets. And a man has used his wife's credit card secretly to buy Bitcoin. And in the judgment, the judge has ruled that the gains from this purchase all belong to the wife. Really cool stuff. And this is a very recent decision that was handed down in May 2022. I have nothing else to say about that, but if anybody is doing anything similar, be prepared that the gains are going to be lost to your loved one. So don't do it secretly. Do it out in the open. Make sure people are aware that when you're buying shit, it's done in conjunction with everybody. Everybody's happy. You're splitting the assets. And that way, at the end, whatever happens, you also split the gains. It's not all given away for, you know, just because you're being an asshole and hiding it from them. So yeah, that's a decision that was just handed down by the Ontario Superior Court.
I don't know if you saw the, did you read through the ruling or no?
I have it here. I mean, I read a little
bit. So I read through it, and there's actually one of the things the judge said. There was also, he also ruled that the husband was, quote, extremely based. So good for him. Yeah, nice.
Okay, very good. That'd be fucking awesome if that was the case. All right, so let's talk about BitBuy, and they tweeted out about a Financial Post piece, and BitBuy's data, they noted that cryptocurrency investors are getting older. In 2022, the median age of cryptocurrency investors was 39 years old, and that's 5 years older than it was in 2018. Now, somebody may say, look, it was just 5 years ago.
Right away, yeah.
But it also goes to show you it's not newer people coming in. It's the same old, or at least, you know, people of that, the middle of the pack, they're buying in. And I found this to be rather interesting that this people that are, you know, in the early, late 30s, maybe early 40s, it seems to be the bulk of the people that are into this thing. So that, for better or for worse, that's what it is. And you know what? They're the people that probably have the most spending money aside from the boomers. I mean, they have the most to gain and a lot to lose too at the same time. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was rather interesting. I'm not sure if you want to add any color to that.
I'll just say that Bitcoin, especially in a down market, when people are saving for houses, going to school, stuff like that, it's a bit of a luxury investment for some. I don't know how much I like that term, but I don't have a better one off the top of my head. And so you kind of would expect to see that. Like you mentioned, that's a demo that's got, you know, a little bit of disposable income, has their footing in terms of their career, their personal situation, oftentimes either married or you know, set in their ways, regardless of whether or not they've chosen to go single or whatever. But I think that's to be expected. It is funny that difference is basically the same, though, as the time elapsed. I don't know why. You know, we probably could have picked a better metric. The real metric to use would probably be something that mixes, you know, median age with median investment amount. But when you're relying on self-reporting, it's very tough. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And that's it for the Canadian stuff. We'll just move on to the rest of the news. And I want to also give kudos again to Bitcoin Gandalf. He was tweeting out that the Bank of England is going to be starting to cut some of the QEs. So it's going to be QT moving forward. But also he was saying that over there, this is nuts. So in England, the government is talking about introducing 30-year mortgages with 100% financing. And it's going to help people get into the property ladder game. That is insane that you essentially $0 down. I know in Europe, it's more common to rent rather than own. It's just, unfortunately, that's the way it is. But allowing people to just get in with 0% financing on a 30-year amortization rate, what is that going to happen to the price of homes as a result? Well, they're going to go up, right? Like, you're just basically giving more people more borrowing power, and that's going to just increase the price of the homes. That is nuts. And with 0% down, that's a lot of risk that's going to be passed on to, I guess, the taxpayers if things go belly up. So yeah, I don't know your thoughts on that.
It's one policy after another that's going to have exactly the opposite outcome that they want. It's incredible. Like, again, like we talked about this, I think 2 weeks ago or something like that, this controlled demolition thing, Len, like, how am I not supposed to think that this is on the table here with these kind of policies? Like, certainly of the 800 PhD economists that work in the, you know, the Bank of England, one of them raises his hand at the meeting and goes, hey, maybe the thing that we back fully is going to continue to raise in price, just like the other stuff we back fully, healthcare, education, stuff like that, which is the case all over the Commonwealth here as well. I don't know. I don't know what they expect to happen, but I'm, you know, if you think that all this stuff is going to happen at some, you know, rate of change, I don't know what it'll be, if it happens 1 year, 2 years or 3 years, all this sort of insanity starts to roll out as far as policies. If you think that that's not going to debase currency, you're almost beyond helping, right? You truly are. If you even have a little bit of an inkling that it might, though, and you're watching this show for the first time or hearing the show for the first time or whatever, like 1%, start with 1%. You can't go wrong at 1% into Bitcoin with all this stuff going on. There's not a lot of competency at the highest levels, it seems to me, in the modern world. And it's not just, you know, it's not just the UK, unfortunately. So, you know, start somewhere. Think about protecting your wealth with Bitcoin.
Another story that I want to talk about is CBDCs. And this is something I talk about frequently on the show.
You love these things.
I do. And I'm going to clump these two stories together. And we had the European Central Bank's Fabio Panetta. He was saying that a digital euro would be limited to a maximum of only 1.5 trillion euros. I do not buy that. I think if they do roll out a digital euro, it wouldn't be hard capped at 1.5 trillion. It would certainly increase it well beyond that once they realize the potential it has for surveillance and for taking away privacy and for control. It just makes sense. They're not going to keep the existing euro floating around. They're going to digitize it as much as can, and just well past a $1.5 trillion limit. But not only that, we have now the Fed, Jerome Powell. He was quoted as saying, "Did you hear this one, Joey?"
The short clip, I did see it, but I'd love for you to rehash it because it's very, very good.
Yeah, so he said rapid changes are taking place in the global monetary system that may affect the international role of the dollar. He's talking about the U.S. dollar. A U.S. central bank digital currency is being examined to help the U.S. dollar's international standing. What the fuck's he talking about here? How is this going to impact positively? This is not that, man. This is all about control. This is all about giving up more privacy. Now you hear it coming right from the Federal Reserve's chair of mouth. A CBDC, they're exploring this. I've been banging this drum for some time, and we've been hearing about it now from everybody's talking about it. Do yourself a favor. Take away all the privacy, the stuff that takes away your privacy. Get rid of that shit. I know it's going to make things a little more difficult in your life, but in the long run, it's for your own health. It's for your own personal health, because you don't want to give up anything more than you have. Privacy is very important to us. It's one of the most important collaterals we have. And if you give it up, you'll never get it back. So CBDC is something that is going to encroach on our privacy. Just be very careful. This is something that's going to be rolled out in a not too distant future. And when it does, it's going to hit us like a ton of bricks. So be ready.
You're a big privacy guy. I always admire that when you talk about, you know, the importance of these things, because it's something people my age and younger don't take seriously. I include myself in there. I have an iPhone. It's, you know, open to the world basically. So I'll just note here, Len, that it's interesting to see Powell's change in tone between the confidence he tries to project at the podium for the FOMC and the things he talks about at this secondary, this alternate meeting, whatever that was. I don't know exactly where that was. Do you know where that was?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd be interested in hearing who was in the audience for that, though. Hey, man, you're right. CBDCs are coming. It's only a matter of time. People who say they're not, or like, I know there's someone on Bitcoin Twitter, a popular guy, might be Dieter, I forget, who says they're redundant. Like, you know, redundancy has never stopped anyone from anything before. And there's some new opportunities here with surveillance that these things allow, and 24/7 payments, which Powell mentioned as well. You know, they're coming. If you think they're not coming, I got a bridge to sell you.
So we know now that Bitcoin uses, obviously everyone knows it uses proof of work. And similar, ETH uses proof of work right now, and it wants to transition to proof of stake. And Solana uses a combination of proof of history and proof of stake. CBDCs use something called proof of authority. That should be enough to say what it's all about. They're going to have very select few nodes that are going to be able to verify stuff. And these are the ones that are going to be run, obviously, by the central bank. And they're going to ones they'll have ultimate control how it gets processed and who gets whatever. And I guess it's proof of authority. That in itself says a lot. So just be very, very careful. And the last story I have is a story about coming out of Russia. And we have the third largest Russian oil company. And I'm going to butcher this. Gazprom Neft.
I think it's Gazprom. Yeah.
Is it? It says Gazprom Neft I have here. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about then. They've partnered with BitRiver to mine Bitcoin. For whatever this means, obviously it makes sense for them to do it. They're being sanctioned left, right, and center. So they have to find other means in order to raise capital and also in order to exchange goods and services on the open market. You know, so it just makes sense if they could mine Bitcoin, and they have a lot of excess energy. But I'm wondering what this means moving forward in terms of Western governments, how they're going to be viewing Bitcoin. If that now that, that you have one of their energy producers that are going to be mining Bitcoin, does it now make Bitcoin mining viewed as a something that's against the state of Western governments? It just makes me wonder how we're going to be moving forward with Bitcoin mining and on a side note, proof of work. It's just something that needs to be considered, and we have to be looking at this with a careful eye.
I'm with you there. Maybe they can send in the ghost of Kiev to do an airstrike. Oh yeah, they fucking made that up. I forgot. Listen, this is going to happen everywhere. They're not the only Bitcoin miner that's got a partnership with an oil and gas company. Gazprom, you know, up until 3 months ago, was supplying fuel to the entire European continent. Now, the entire European continent is having to buy that fuel, the same fuel, by the way, from India. So, you know, whatever you say about Gazprom and all this stuff, like, is an attack on the state for the U.S. They may try and frame it that way. But, Len, I just think there's so much so much less trust in institutions, government institutions specifically, and the states, I think, might be on the spear's edge when it comes to that, that people just they don't buy it. No one buys it. You know, you're talking about a population that's just had it with government. Doesn't matter the color. Doesn't matter the creed. They don't believe it. And so, you know, we talk about the sovereign individual all the time. I think we're getting close to this sort of they fight you stage of all these things in a more significant manner than just Elizabeth Warren TikTok videos and shit like that. So buckle up, man. Privacy, like you said, important. Paying attention to what's going on in the macro world, political economy, all these things, more important than ever. I know it's taxing. I know it's stressful, but you know, it's worth a couple minutes a day to look at some of this stuff for sure.
Do you know how they get around the whole India buying the oil and then selling it off? Did you figure it out? Because I did some research on this. They printed off all these labels and just has the Indian flag on it. They slap it on over the Russian flag. And it looks like the barrel of oil is straight from India. It's not coming from it. It's a very ingenious way. They just
hard to tell.
Yeah. Fucking slap that shit on. You're good to go. And that's it for the stories. I have, before we go on, I do have two no coiners, but no a Bitcoiner of the week. Do you have anything?
I got both. My okay. No coiner is a lot shorter. Do you want to start with that?
So this segment of the show is brought to you by the Great Tahini's Restaurant. So 13 locations from last I checked in Southern Ontario. Check them out. They are there. He's got the shirt on. Sorry, the hat on. I just do the same. Yeah, it's even has the shirt and the hat to match. So brought to you by Tahini's. Check them out. They have many, many locations in Southern Ontario. If you are within driving distance, it's worth your while to go eat over there because you know what? The owner is a Bitcoiner. We've had Ali on our show. Ali has been out in many, many shows. His story is wonderful. He's, I don't want to rehash it, but yeah, it's sponsored by Tahini's. Check it out. It's a great place to buy lunch and dinner. So go ahead with your selection and I'll go with my no coiners after you.
I'm just going to say mine is, Federal Reserve board member, FOMC board member, who likes to speak today. I gotta pull up the tweets here before I even get into it. So Bullard likes to talk usually about a week or so after the FOMC meeting. I'm gonna pull up some of his tweets. I think it's Jim Bullard. I'm pretty sure his name is Jim. Anyway,
not so. Mike.
Not Mike, though. Mike Bullard also, you know, another notable Bullard. Great smile on that guy. So let me tell you here. Normally, I wouldn't care what this guy has to say. But the thing that everyone should be paying attention to is that, as you and I have discussed, there's some thought, I think, in most of Bitcoin Twitter, most of the Bitcoin world, that the Fed is playing chicken with the general population vis-a-vis the rate game and vis-a-vis QT and vis-a-vis all these sort of economic controls and whatnot, right? So when people say that, what they mean is they're not going to be able to do all the hiking they're talking about doing. They're jawboning. They're trying to convince you that this is going to happen and you know, to get the result that they want without actually breaking some of these other systems. Today, Len, the Fed's Bullard, we don't seem to have as far to go on QT as it might seem. They're already setting the stage to stop the quantitative tightening operation and probably are going to start soon setting the stage to either stop hiking interest rates or cut them. And I'll tell you right now, when they announce that they're not going to raise or that they're going to cut, the price of Bitcoin is going to go bonkers, man. It is going to go absolutely gangbusters because that's what risk on assets do. And I think a lot of people are, you know, much the same way that the bottom this time was 20,000. That tells you more and more people realize that this thing's got legs and is going to play a role in a properly positioned defensive portfolio allocation. Jim Bullard, keep talking. I got lots of recurring buys, lots of limit orders, lots of time. Keep talking, brother. You're my no corner of the week. I can't wait for the sats you're going to give me, my man. The value is going to be outstanding.
Very good. Federal Reserve people have been many times no coiners on our show. Many times.
They're frequent no coiners, man. How can they not be? It's like the perfect cocktail of confidence and incompetence. It's the sort of thing that, you know, when you're the last time that sort of cocktail existed, you know, it was in the Three Stooges characters, you know, like it just makes for incredible comedy. It's well known, that formula. And so Bullard's got it in spades.
All right. So let's transition to mine. I have a double no coiner. It's been a while since I've had one of these. And the first one is a financial dude named Philip Strabel. I think that's his name. He was on BNN Bloomberg and he was quoted as saying that he believes that Bitcoin is going to go to $0. And he also suggests that ETH is also going to go to zero.
When did he say this? Recently? 2013? Oh my God, still with these guys. Okay.
Yes. And he's BNN Bloomberg. So he was on there. So, you know, there's some credibility to that. And he was saying both Bitcoin and ETH will go to zero. So I can't speak much on the ETH side, but the Bitcoin stuff, I could say that I have a limit order of 1 cent for all $21 million. So it's impossible to go to zero. But he was also suggesting that people buy gold because there's an industrial use to it and so forth. Well, I've gone through this. I used to actually like gold. Now, not too long, even last year, I liked gold as putting a percentage of your wealth towards it. But what happened with the gold being Venezuelan gold and Russian gold stuck in London and cannot be repatriated? And I understand why it's not, but the fact that they cannot get access to their own gold makes me believe that owning gold is not something you should do. Owning Bitcoin, if you have your keys, you will always have access to your Bitcoin. So it will never go to zero, and it has more use than does gold does, because at least you will always have access to it. I understand you could use it in industrial setting, but I'm not running a factory here. If I was going to buy gold, it was going to be for holding my wealth, and I don't have faith in it because at any particular moment in time, it could be confiscated. That's just my two cents with Mr. Philip Strabel. The second no coiner I have is a gentleman by the name of Dennis Dick, and he is a CFA, so he's got some credentials behind him. And he tweeted out this past week, he said, "This Bitcoin scarcity argument is very disingenuous. Are assets really scarce when they could be divided into 100 million pieces?" I love it. Mr. Dick.
Another pizza guy. Are you kidding me with this?
This is the man. This is the guy. So Mr. Dick, I took a look to see how many outstanding shares there are for Apple, 16 billion. How many outstanding shares for Amazon, 10 billion. Alphabet, their Class A common stock, we have 301 million out there. Even Tesla has 1.1 billion shares. So there's a lot of shares out there for these very expensive companies. And can you say, okay, they're not an asset in the same way that you would look at other things? So let's talk about gold. Sure, and you can make the argument there's only 16 ounces per pound. But I took a look into gold a little bit further. You could theoretically divide gold into atoms. And how many atoms are there in 1 ounce of gold? Well, the number is 8.43 times 10 to the 22. So just contemplate that number. It's astronomical amount of atoms that are in 1 ounce of gold. So even something like gold can be divvied up into an astronomical number. So just because it could be done like that doesn't make it not scarce. This guy has to understand, in the end, you could have 21 million Bitcoin, but even if it's divided by 100 million each, it's still scarce because there's going to be so many out there. I don't understand how this cock, Mr. Dick, says that, and he's a CFA, so he's got some credentials, apparently. He can say that.
Letters may as well be LOL, buddy.
So I'm going to give him some. He's nearby here. I think he's in just north of us. So if he wants to come on our show and defend his argument, I will give him an open invitation to come on the Canadian Bitcoiner podcast to discuss why he believes that this is not a scarce asset because it is divided by 100 million. Open invitation. I'd love to have you come on a show and discuss your position on this. And I'll argue my position on this. I'm sure Joey would argue his too. So I give you this. Please come on our show. I'd love to talk about this in more detail. But until then, you are my second no coiner of the week.
Who's he work for? He works for Bread and Fishes Capital Management, Jesus Christ CFA. Everything's infinitely divisible. There's no problems.
It's premarketprep.com. That's the website that he's touting on his webpage. I'm sorry, on his Twitter thing here. It's also prop trader and equity market structure analyst at Bright Trading. So that's another one, Bright Trading. He's in Georgia.
That's another profession that's going to unwind with bear market. Like, you've been in a 15-year bull market. If you're 45 years old, you've only been a pro when everything was going up. You know, if you ever hit a real rocky, you know, time, like, for example, if there's a monetary reset or something of that nature, good luck, man. It's like, you got to be good at your job to actually keep your job in a market like that. And he's obviously got some shortcomings. So I like that. Jesus Christ CFA, Bread and Loaves Capital Management, or Bread and Fishes Capital Management. When can we start that? We should get like a, can we print that? Let me talk to Kens about that.
Well, I mean, he's in Georgian base, so he really is relatively local to us. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, we've had no coiners from across the world, so Georgian Bay is pretty close. So, you know, it's a local no coiner. Let's take that for what it's worth.
Yeah,
yeah, that's basically it.
I got a Bitcoiner.
Oh, sorry,
easy one this week. I listened to what Bitcoin did today because Preston Pish was on, and so he's gonna be my Bitcoiner of the week. If you're ever like, I don't really need the calming influence like I did in 2018, 2019 when things were really rough. But if you ever find yourself in need of a calming voice who explains things succinctly, very articulate, easy to understand, and will give you the receipts in a way that's a little less information dense, but still really carries the point well, I can't recommend anyone more than Preston Pish, I don't think. He's very level-headed. He's got an investing background, runs the We Study Billionaires podcast over the Investors Podcast Network, among others. It's just a great podcast that he did with Peter. McCormick asks good questions that he knows his crowd probably wants to hear the answers to. And Pish is talking about a slide deck that he gave to an energy conference, I think. So, yeah, man, can't recommend enough. I like Preston. I hope he comes on the show one day. We've tried to get him. We've been unsuccessful so far, but maybe in 2022 we can snipe him before the end of the year.
We're confident. Yeah. All right. So that's it. We're going to transition shortly to the after show, and we want to talk to the people in the chat. So don't disappear just yet. So before we sign off, the price of Bitcoin in US dollars, do you have that handy?
I could just look at my block clock.
So
it's got the block height now. It's 20,501. I just looked back there.
All right. 26,593 in Canuck bucks. And that's it. Any closing remarks before we go to the after show, Joey?
Make sure you use the hashtag CBP Shake Squad. Join up with someone you like, meet someone new, and definitely reap the benefits. And we'll see everyone in a couple minutes or for a couple minutes on YouTube. So if you're on audio, come over to YouTube. Let's chop it up for a bit. God bless you.
Take care.